Hello and welcome to the Cornerstone League podcast, bringing together credit union advocates, thought leaders, champions, and more. I'm your host, Tanya Detberner, Cornerstone League Director of Communications and Media Relations. Today I'm with Tamara Gaines, Cornerstone League Vice President of Experiences and Events, who will tell us about our special guest today, author and top podcaster Ryan Hawk. Cornerstone will feature Ryan Hawk at the upcoming Elevate Credit Union Leadership Summit in Houston. Ryan Hawk is the host of The Learning Leader Show, which has been acclaimed by Forbes and Inc. magazine and named an all-time bestseller in 2020 and 2021 by Apple. He is the author of two books, Welcome to Management, How to Grow from Top Performer to Excellent Leader, and The Pursuit of Excellence, The Uncommon Behaviors of the World's Most Productive Achievers. Tamara, besides his impressive resume, what was your interest in bringing Ryan in to speak at Elevate?
Thanks for that question, Tanya. It's a pleasure to be with you today. The Cornerstone team's always looking for speakers who will bring the greatest value to the development of our members, whether it be job-specific or a way to enhance their own leadership journey. In this particular case, I think there were two key things that really drew me to Ryan. On his show, The Learning Leader Show, he digs deeply into topics that align really well with credit union members. And his questions and interviews lead to fantastic insights that, again, I think will really resonate with our members. And secondly, like his show, his books contain universal wisdom about leadership. His first book, Welcome to Management, is an essential guide to newly promoted managers. And the advice in this book, it's actionable and it comes from a really informed place. In a second book, The Pursuit of Excellence, Ryan uses his outstanding interview skills to uncover the behaviors of the world's greatest leaders, identifying patterns and characteristics that truly set individuals apart from others.
Ryan seems to have the credentials to help guide and influence aspiring and existing leaders. What are you most excited about related to his keynote?
Well, personally, I love podcasts and books that guide learning and growth. And Ryan not only brings his own experiences to the table from his years in corporate America, but also from his research from his books. And I think through that process of speaking with notable high achievers, he's not only interviewing some of the greatest leaders, but he's also learning from those who didn't quite do leadership very well. And those conversations that are going to be shared at Elevate are going to be inspiring to our credit union leaders to motivate themselves and their teams to become top performers. I'm really glad that you were able to take time to chat with Ryan for the Cornerstone League podcast.
Well, thank you. And thank you so much for the insight. I'm personally looking forward to the message Ryan will deliver at Elevate, which takes place August 31st through September 2nd in Houston, Texas. For those listening who are not yet registered, visit cornerstoneleague.coop to learn more and to register. And now, here's my conversation with Ryan Hawk. With me today is Ryan Hawk, podcaster, author, and leadership guru. He's here to talk about his books, leadership, and his journey from the corporate world to author. Ryan, thank you so much for joining me today.
I appreciate you having me, Tanya. It's good to be with you.
You have a fascinating story leading you to host one of the most highly rated podcasts in America, The Learning Leader Show. Tell us about your journey and why building a culture of learning is a passion of yours.
When I think about my favorite coaches, teachers, and bosses in my life, they were very aggressive when it came to bettering themselves, to approaching life with a curious mind, to taking notes, to reading books, to learning from mentors, to not ever believing they had it fully figured out and always striving to learn for the betterment of themselves, but more importantly, for the betterment of others. And so when I had that little thought bubble of who are my favorites, who are the ones who have impacted me the most, they're learning leaders. And that's how the name of my podcast came about, is that these people are leaders, they're people of influence, they're making a difference, and they're regularly learning. It's a daily process for them. So I was fascinated by that fact, and that's what I want to be. And so it started 7.5 years ago out of that desire, and it hasn't gone away. In fact, it's gotten even more since I've started now, even though we're coming up on a decade. So it's pretty wild how it's all worked out.
It sounds like humility is
the core component of that, right? At its foundation, humility is, it precedes the need to learn. How does one balance humility with the confidence that's needed to move forward?
I think the most impactful leaders do a great job of that. I think there are multiple characteristics and qualities needed to effectively lead people, to lead yourself. Humility is, I think, the enabler for curiosity. And I think curiosity eventually leads to wisdom and knowledge, growth. So I think that's important. Confidence is built by proving to yourself that you can do hard things. Confidence needs evidence. And so for me, a regular way to build confidence is to stretch my current zone of comfort and competency. And one of the ways I stretch that competency zone and comfort zone, I would say, is by speaking with people who are far wiser than me, who have an exceptional set of life experiences that I could draw from, trying to have a thoughtful, entertaining, informative conversation with someone like Adam Grant or Kat Cole really is a stretch. And if I'm regularly putting myself in the position of stretching and then doing well, that is proving to myself that I can do something hard. As I said, confidence needs evidence. That's evidence. So I think I can balance that humility by it leading to curiosity with the confidence that is built through regularly doing hard things, whether that's physically or mentally or both. That's how I balance that. But I do think confidence is a very important quality in a leader. You rarely will follow somebody that has not developed confidence.
Tell me about your early influences or heroes when you decided to follow this path.
I'm very fortunate to have been raised by two great parents, and I'm the middle of three kids, so an older brother and a younger brother. So, I mean, when you ask that question, that's the first thing I think of is growing up in our house. I'm still very close with my parents and my brothers. I think it's a house that really is a culture of consistency, of being there for others, of showing up and doing work every day, as being known as someone who's dependable and reliable, and just overall trying to leave people, places, and things better than we found them. And so it became very normal for me to see my mom and my dad go out of their way to help other people. That's why I don't view that as being anything other than that's just what we should do, because I've seen it so much. And now as a dad, I think of that a lot, because I want those great qualities in a person to be viewed as normal for my own children that I'm trying to be a good parent for. So that's where it all stems from. And then as I got older, I think just my curiosity grew because I was lucky to be influenced by a lot of amazing leaders, first on the football field as a player in high school and college and a little bit after college, and then in the professional world, where I was fortunate to work at a great company called LexisNexis and work for a vice president of sales named Rex Caswell, who really helped me in my pursuit and study of excellent performance, and then other leaders through mentors that didn't even know they were my mentors, and that's of authors, books, writers, people who poured their heart and soul into something, an artifact that cost me only about $18 to buy, and I could learn so much. And now, fortunately, after starting my podcast a while ago, I've been lucky to have deep, long-form conversations with those people and publish those episodes for others to hear as I'm learning in public. So it really starts from my house and my home. It's still from there. And now it has since branched out to other great leaders I've been lucky to meet.
So you mentioned your stint in corporate America. You spent 12 years there. And now have a successful podcast, and you've written two books, Welcome to Management, How to Grow from Top Performer to Excellent Leader, and The Pursuit of Excellence, The Uncommon Behaviors of the World's Most Productive Achievers. How did you make the leap from corporate worker to published author? I mean, I'm looking for the catalyst that compelled you to share your experiences with the world.
I think first and foremost, I had no intention of ever leaving. And maybe that's part of why it's worked out the way it has. No plan, no ambition, no goals. So I'd gotten my MBA when I worked in the corporate America. The company paid for it, or they reimbursed me, and like most companies do. And I thought, I'm wasting money if I don't go back to school after my MBA. So I considered going back to school again. But I didn't love the process of getting my MBA. It was painful. I needed tutors to help me out. I didn't love all the classes. So as I was applying for these PhD programs in management or leadership, I thought, is there a better way? At the time, I was a big podcast listener. Even though it was a little bit early, there weren't as many podcasts, but I was listening to Joe Rogan or Bill Simmons or Brian Koppelman or others who were out there, Todd Henry. I thought, maybe I could do this. Maybe I could create my own form of a leadership PhD program where I get to choose all of the professors and I can ask them whatever I want, and I will publish those conversations so that others can learn in public with me. And who knows what could happen? Maybe it could create a really neat community around people becoming learning leaders. So I did study hard and prepared like crazy to understand how to develop and create a podcast that I thought could be useful for other people, and understood how iTunes worked and new and noteworthy and all of that stuff at the time. I did a lot of that work. I recorded 22 episodes prior to launch, launched it again 7.5 years ago, and it's since now has been published at least one per week,
wow,
every single week for those 7.5 years. But what started happening, Tanya, I think that led me to leave corporate America was I started getting requests. Will you come speak at our conference or speak at our national sales meeting or speak or do whatever from a speaking perspective? Can you share what you've learned with our company, with our conference members, with our team, whatever? That started happening. Others started requesting one-on-one senior level executive coaching, which was weird to me because I was not a senior executive. But so they were asking me for help to do something that I had never done before. But I had spoken with a lot of people who have and developed knowledge. So what I'm saying is the market told me that the market wanted to pay me for that knowledge that had been built, as well as, you know, advertising sales that go with podcasts and all of it. So the podcast was the foundational element that created many opportunities. I tell younger people, try to create something that makes others want to come to you. What magnetic force are you creating in the world? Are you publishing or shipping work on any type of a platform that makes others want to come to you? That's what started happening. And when it happened too much to the point where I had no more PTO days and it was becoming a distraction for my day job, I had to make a choice. Do I want to maybe scale it back so it wasn't becoming too much of a distraction? Or do I just leave that corporate job? At the time, I was VP of sales. So those VP jobs, big salaries and bonuses and all that, do I leave that and try to put all of my effort towards this? And my thought process was I could always probably find a job. I don't know if I could find that good of a job, but I could probably find a job. But I can't always capitalize on the momentum that I've created from what this podcast and everything that goes with it has done. And so that's why in 2017, I elected to leave and do this full time. And now here we are. It's amazing how fast the time has gone since leaving that. So now I'm excited to have the opportunity to continue to grow this. But like I said, I think there's a lot of side hustles created with the intention to make it your full-time job. That was not mine. I don't have these grand illusions of what I could do. It's really about just kind of head down working each day. Every once in a while, you put your head up and see what's out there and see what's desired from the marketplace, and capitalize on some of those opportunities that come about because of the diligent work done every single day. So it's more about process-related goals versus results-based goals. That's more of kind of how I approach this. That's why I'm not a really good long-term planner. I don't have a 5-year plan. I'm not sure what's going to happen next. But I do know what I'm going to do today and what I'm going to do tomorrow and how I'm going to prepare and how I'm going to be ready to go for each of these big moments that come up now quite frequently.
Sounds like a great plan. No plan.
Well, I think for me at least, it's been most useful. I know others have different ways and that's completely fine. I think that's part of the deal of whether it's leadership or building a business is you have to figure out what's right for you, what moves you, what compels you to do the really hard work when nobody's watching in order to produce great stuff. Whatever it is, some people do need to set the BHAGs and do that and strive for them. I get that. That just isn't necessarily the way that I go about doing it.
Takes a great deal of self-awareness to just take a step back, take the ego out of it, and just listen. Like you said, listen to the market. What did the market require of you? Mm-hmm. What did you require of yourself as well? You know, and you yourself say it, you don't need to make those long-term plans, but that's you. That's everybody is different, and everybody is a different, everybody learns differently as well.
So true. It's true. I think you, that's part of, I mean, it's a lot of what I write about and teach about is you first have to lead yourself, and mm-hmm. you can't lead yourself until you really understand yourself. And most of us need to become more self-aware. So it's a constant work in progress to better understand yourself and what you want to do and where your strengths and what you need to work on. All of that, it's just a lot of work. And the fun part about it is that's never ending work. You're constantly iterating and updating that. And I enjoy that challenge.
Let's talk about your podcast real quick. You've interviewed hundreds of people and many with recognizable names, many big names. Can you tell us about some of your most memorable interviews?
I just recently did a live show with Kat Cole in Atlanta at the Insight Global corporate headquarters. I'm really proud of that one because there was a lot of planning. There was very high expectations, and Kat just crushed them all. And I think that was a big one. So I'd say I'm very proud of that. I hold our American military in really high regard. So two that I think of in that space were General Stanley McChrystal, who I've had on multiple times, who also wrote the foreword to my first book that is just next level leadership. And then Admiral William McRaven, the leader in charge of the Osama bin Laden raid, was also on. And so those two are probably ones that I'm extremely proud of, because not only are they leaders in high esteem and high regard, but I've developed relationships with them outside of doing the podcast, because I think they respected the approach and the preparation done. In fact, I got to, General McChrystal invited me to go to Gettysburg with his class that he teaches at Yale. So there's a bunch of students from Yale, a few guests, and I happened to be one of those. And it was just one of those moments of like, I can't believe this is real, where I'm touring the grounds of Gettysburg and my teacher, the person sharing the knowledge of the history of these battles, is General Stanley McChrystal. Like, it was just wild to get to experience that. So, I mean, it's hard to pick just a few, but those are a first two or three that come to mind.
Cornerstone is highly focused on providing quality professional development to our members and their staff. We believe that when people feel invested in and see a path for their career, that it builds trust and loyalty with the organization. Why do you believe a learning culture is important, and why isn't everybody doing it?
Yeah, I mean, I guess it seems obvious to me. It seems like it sounds like it seems obvious to you. I do this exercise when I work with leadership teams called Good Boss, Bad Boss. It's very basic. It's very simple, but it's illuminating. You get a big sheet of paper, and on one side you write favorite boss. On the other side you write bad boss or worst boss, whatever. And you just list the qualities of those great favorite bosses versus the qualities of the bad boss. And when you start seeing themes, if you do this for years, as I have, is the themes of the great and best bosses are open mind, always improving, always striving to learn, to grow, to get better themselves first and foremost, because then that permeates throughout the organization. And the bad bosses usually are, they already have all the answers, they know it all, they've done it. Oh no, we're not going to do that because that's not how we do things around here. So the difference between the great bosses and the bad bosses is the great ones are learning leaders. And the bad ones think they've got it all figured out. They don't read books, they don't read articles, they don't really have an open mind. They think, I've got this. And usually they may have had some sort of success at some point in their career, and they don't fully understand why, but what they believe is everything that I know is enough, or everything that I currently know is why I've been great, and we're just going to stick to this and do nothing else and never learn and grow and iterate. So if your organization is not built on learning and improvement and getting better, you'll end up with a lot of the bosses, the leaders, from the ones in that bad boss column. And if you go long enough with too many of those people, your organization will die. It will not get better. It won't grow. It will eventually die. So I think that's why creating a learning organization where that is a part of the fundamental values of the organization is so critical, because we want to grow, we want to improve, we want this company or organization to thrive and to get better. And it's not going to get better unless it has a learning and development mindset.
So we see this scenario so often in the corporate world. A high-performing individual contributor or frontline worker catches management's eye. He or she gets promoted to manager and now has a direct report or two or three. And in addition to retaining some of their old duties, they now have to spend time coaching their team, delegating, following up, assessing the team's work, you know, managing. What do organizations get wrong when they promote a high performer? And what does this new leader need to be successful in their new role?
This was me. I mean, this was me. I was a top sales performer. I got a chance to interview because of that. And I got hired having absolutely no idea what I was doing. And I was bad at it at the beginning. That's why I wrote Welcome to Management. I wrote it for myself. I wrote the book I needed to have at that very moment in my career, which is a lot of us go through this. You're great as an individual contributor. In my case, it was in the profession of selling. And then you go to lead a team, and very few of those skills that made you great in that job are helpful. Now, some of them you get into training sessions and you say, hey, some of the performance elements of coaching where kind of say this, not that. This is how we structure our day. Like, there are some things that are helpful, but all of the other elements don't work. So what I think most organizations do, and I work for a great place, but we still struggled in this area like most companies do. In fact, I did a survey of some of the greatest companies in the world, people who are now VP level and above, in this simple one question text message to a number of these people. What was the training process like when you got promoted from individual contributor to first time manager? What was it? And I'm not, Tanya, I got laughing emojis more times than not. Yes, that's what I got. Meaning there was none.
I bet.
There was none. So people get promoted and basically tossed in the deep end and figure it out. There may be like a half day manager boot camp. I went to something like that. It was a half day manager. They called it manager boot camps, half day. Now, that half day was fine, but the rest of it was, I was figuring it out as I went. So like most people, you're going to screw up over and over. For example, one of the most important things to do when you become a manager now is hiring and firing, which nobody teaches you how to do either of those things, at least at most places. So you get in, you have these, I had four open positions when I got promoted. You get in these positions where you're interviewing people and you haven't defined clearly what you're looking for, and you haven't defined any type of interview process. You haven't defined any of the necessary questions to see if those people exhibit the qualities that you really want, because you haven't even defined what you really want. You don't know. You haven't taken the time. So there's so many areas of the job that you haven't done that you don't get trained on, and that's why most people struggle. And I think it's a skill. Managing and leading a team is a skill that absolutely can be learned. And I do think, I will say, Tanya, that companies are getting better at this. I think in the past, it wasn't really thought of. Now it seems in my informal surveys and going to companies and helping and working with them, they're getting better at this for the most part. But it is still a work in progress for a really well-defined and well-crafted leadership development program for high potentials who may eventually become managers and leaders. I think those people need to start learning that stuff well before they even interview for one of those jobs, so that when they do get it, not only does the training continue, but they've already been trained a bit to be ready for roles like that. And that will then set you up to be in a better position to do well versus making mistakes over and over and having to learn the hard way like a lot of us have.
Why do you think companies are getting better at it now? What's happening that's making them more aware?
It's this message seems to be out there more. People are talking about it. People write books about it. There's articles. It seems to be a much more talked about subject than it used to be. And leaders, like a lot of things, the leaders are getting better. Leaders are improving. The senior ones saying, wait, I really struggled at this. We need to fix this. So I just think there's just more awareness in general that this is a problem. Not everywhere they're realizing it, but more awareness, at least in my experiences and are doing a better job to try to help fix this before people get into it and make too many mistakes.
I think empathy is having kind of a moment in our in mainstream corporate culture, right? It's cool to be empathetic now. And it's quite okay to break cycles and not be that bad boss who trained you.
It's so true. So true. And I think that's a great sign. It's great. There's still a lot of work to do, but it's definitely, at least from what I've seen, gotten better.
What's an issue that keeps popping up in your conversations with people, leadership or otherwise?
Especially if I work with companies who are a lot of only promote from within, is there's this, and if they promote fast, I've seen and had the question come up a lot about imposter syndrome, which is not the worst thing because that stems from a good place, usually of humility. But that's a big one that's come up of how to deal with that. And I think imposter syndrome can be defeated through confidence, as we talked about early, and the evidence that you prove to yourself that you can do hard things and that you got promoted for a reason, and to better understand the reasons why you were promoted and to constantly work on it, as well as then to do it, whatever it is. If you feel like an imposter standing up in front of your team, the best way to develop confidence is to do it, and then to receive feedback perhaps from a coach or an outside resource that can help you. So that seems to be one that comes up more and more, especially if someone was promoted a little bit earlier in their career than maybe even they think they're fully ready for.
Do you have any final thoughts that you'd like to share with our listeners? Is there anything that I forgot to ask you that you're just dying to share?
I would say one of the little tangents I've got on recently is just about books. Books are the greatest deal and investment in the history of the world. So for about $18, you can peer inside the heart and soul and mind of a thoughtful person who has dedicated years of their life to that artifact. The book buying rule that I got from Ramit Sethi that I now espouse to everyone is, if you're even thinking of for a millisecond of buying a book, or checking it out from the library, whatever it may be, buy the book, check it out from the library, because even if you only get one idea, one, and you'll probably get more than that from these books you're thinking about, it's the greatest return on investment in the history of your life. So I would say be someone who buys books and who reads books and who tries to implement what they learn from books. And I'm a fan of biographies, of learning from people in history. So find the biographies of people you're most curious about and dig in. I've never met an amazing leader who isn't extremely well-read. And so I'm a big believer that leaders need to be constantly learning from those who have come before them. And one of the best ways to do that is through reading books.
Well, Ryan, thank you so much for spending time with me today. I know our listeners will learn so much from the learning leader himself. So thank you.
Oh, thanks so much for having me, Tanya. It's great to be with you. I appreciate all of your preparation. This was fun.
You have just listened to the Cornerstone League podcast. Many thanks to Ryan Hawk for his leadership insights and to Tamara Gaines for her insights and for providing details about Elevate Credit Union Leadership Summit, where Ryan will be delivering the opening keynote. Elevate takes place this year, August 31st through September 2nd in Houston, Texas. Register on the Cornerstone League website at cornerstoneleague.coop. Until next time.